Faded.
Nah, I done grew around some people living their life in bottles. Granddaddy had the golden flats, backstroke every day.
Well, according to David, we just had the best hour of radio ever in 3 and Out history. Mark it down.
With this killing, I've lost my shilling.
Julia, mark it down. That's April the 19th, hour number one.
2019.
We
did it for you, the listener. Okay, we'll try to talk some sports now.
It's just going to make me angry, though, because the only new thing out of Tennessee is that we're still waiting on our transfer people to get cleared.
Yeah, Tate Martell participated in the spring game for Miami.
How is this possible?
I don't know.
Like, what are the rules here? This is the we made the jokes, but, I mean, your Easter egg hunt and the NCAA, I'm not sure which is more ridiculous. Like, what? How can Tate Martell be already cleared when he had no – I mean, the reason he transferred was they got a better player than me.
Yeah. Fields in, I'm out.
He even said when
NCAA,
they got that
– sounds good.
Even said when they got that better player that he wasn't going anywhere and they liked his situation. So how can you justify that? Is Justin Fields already cleared for Ohio State?
Oh, yeah.
What the hell? D'Angelo Gibbs and Aubrey Solomon for Tennessee, of course, still just waiting. Waiting to hear. Like what is going on? At Ohio State, Matthew Baldwin has now entered the transfer portal. He's a quarterback, you said.
No, thanks.
I have no idea if
I'm good.
If he's any good.
I'll stick with Harrison Bailey, Maurer, Shrout, and JG for now. What's it? Who is it?
Matthew Baldwin. Apparently he tore his ACL last year.
No offense to him. We're crowded.
He was splitting time with Justin Fields in spring practice. Must have lost the battle.
Yeah. Lost the battle. Mm. Don't want the sloppy seconds. Sorry. I think I'm out.
I mean, he's only a redshirt freshman. It wouldn't be like a...
That would be a lot of redshirt freshmen and freshmen on this roster.
It's true.
I mean, I think we're good. I just, no need to rush it.
He's from Texas. They think he's probably going to go back closer to home. He was a 4-star.
All right. Bye. See ya. I got 4 stars coming in. Hmm. I got Harrison Bailey. I'm good. I don't want to scare him off anymore. Don't want to risk it. Let's just keep him in the fold. Let him recruit guys like Rakeem Jarrett, all these other dudes.
What about Brian Maurer? What about JT Shrout?
No, we got them. Like they're here. They're already here. And Harrison Bailey hasn't decommitted. If we had another one, that'd be 5 quarterbacks on the roster next year. It's way too many.
Yeah.
It's just roster management. We just don't need it. Although I do say processing quarterbacks as fast as you can is not a bad idea until you find one that hits. But until Harrison Bailey gets here, there's just no need to scare him off. It's not a good idea.
Yeah, it kind of goes against what you were just saying. Like, the more the merrier, and then just figure it out.
No, it's completely contradictory.
You got to process them in the right time. Like, once they get here, you can process them. If you bring somebody in, though, and scare away Harrison Bailey, that's a terrible, terrible mistake.
True.
You got to see them first. And right now, you've got 3. You'll have 4 next year, and then probably 1 or 2 of those gets, processed or told to look elsewhere. And then you bring in the next couple and move forward.
Was it weird that Maurer play like a lot more than Shrout in the spring game, even though their order was the reverse of that? Like, Shrout came in second. He was like this number 2. But I felt like maybe it's just the way the game went.
I don't.
People were, raving about Maurer as soon as he threw like 2 passes. And then he threw 2 picks.
Everyone loves the freshman quarterback, the guy, he moves well, he can run around a little bit, so I think, it kind of makes sense. He's a little bit different. He does some things that, JG and Shrout can't really do just because he's got quick feet. People like the idea of somebody who can extend plays with their legs. Of course, all the quarterbacks had to do that because blocking was rather atrocious on Saturday.
David said, I thought I heard somewhere that Pruitt hasn't submitted the paperwork yet for immediate eligibility our transfers. Is this true? Surely not, right?
Come on.
David, I have no idea. That seems completely fake news to me, but like, surely that's not true.
No way.
I haven't heard that.
No way.
That makes no sense.
Come on. That can't be real.
Can't be. I don't know. Let us know where you heard that.
No.
It's not like that's not even Pruitt's job, right? I mean, Pruitt's job is to just tell somebody, hey, make sure that gets done.
I would think so.
But, like, Pruitt's not up at, 11:30 at night, typing up some form in the NCAA database system for Aubrey Solomon, right?
Again, I would hope not. I would hope not. What is the expectation this year for Garantano? Like, how much better do we need him to be in
Well, that's the thing. I don't think you need him to be that much better, like, straight statistically, because it was weird. Last year, his stats at times would be like, man, he was actually pretty good today or during this stretch or whatever. But it's those, like baseball is much more a sport about, like, and you play so many games and whatever. It's like, okay, whoever has the best stats typically is going to have the best team over the life of the season. Football is the complete opposite. I mean, one big play in a football game can be everything. And the rest of the stats, you just throw them out the window. So it's more that in the big, like, you can't have the big mistakes. You can't have he didn't throw a lot of picks, but getting hit and fumbled. And
I will say, going off that, last year JG only had one game where he threw for more than 300 yards. That was against Auburn. I feel, with what we've seen so far and what we expect to happen with the offensive line, we're not going to be able to run the ball. I think he's going to have a couple of games where he's up there. And
is that, like, that's not his fault, though. So, like, so the expectation is not for the running game to get better, but it's for him to just, like, carry the team. I'm not saying that to, like, put you in your place, because no. I think that's what a lot of people are saying. Well, we're not going to be able to run it, so we're just going to throw it.
We are having different conversations. You're saying, what's the expectation on his level of play? Davey's talking more about what's going to have to happen for you to win.
Yeah, we haven't.
Well, I think winning is the expectation,
we didn't get into it the other day when we were talking about, like, the recruiting class as it related to Kongbo's comments, but Jared Guarantano was the number one dual-threat quarterback in that class. He has not played like that. I could go and find you 10 examples of someone who ended up playing better that was rated below him. And granted, I mean, they're in better situations, but if you're going to talk about him being the quarterback that's going to take you there, and I mean, is it fair to probably put that on him? No, but you're the quarterback at a top SEC school. You're expected to take that jump. And hopefully with Jim Chaney, I think it's possible that he has 3 or 4 games where he does get the 300.
He was 11th in the league last year in passing yards. So, like, how much of a jump do you expect him to make in that area?
I don't know. Like, I don't think like a yards. Like, I don't know if 3 games over 300 is like, oh, well, that would mean good things. I don't know. I mean, I look at the fact that he only threw 12 touchdowns last year. Like, honestly, the yardage in a lot of games wasn't great. It wasn't terrible, but can we put more in the end zone?
He was 8th in QBR in the league with whatever QBR this
so
SEC
middle of the
sports
pack
uses.
He only threw 3 picks. Like, he didn't give the ball to the other team. Now, he did fumble a few times because he got hit. I don't really place all that on him. A few of them certainly were.
I would like to sit in the film room with Tyson Helton, watching the All-22 with Jared Guarantano not there, and for Helton to tell me how many times he missed throws because he held on to, like, it's great if you don't throw a lot of interceptions, but that's no good if it means you if you're not throwing picks because you never take the shot down the field with the plays designed to go, then, like, what are we even doing? And it seemed like the Tyson Helton offense was a lot of that. It was a lot of, I called a play for one purpose, and we never even got to that point because either we couldn't block it, or we didn't pull the trigger, or the receiver ran the wrong route, or whatever. I wonder how many times a guy has been at least sort of open, and you should pull the trigger and throw that ball, because it's probably either going to be complete or incomplete. There's no risk, or very little risk, and he just didn't see it, or didn't trust it, or... Because for me, that's the big question. It's like Peyton Manning talking about putting a drive together as the quarterback. Quarterback is, the quarterback really is a measure of efficiency. Like, it really, when it boils down to it, you don't have to hit any 70-yard plays on offense. The key is to get 10 yards in three plays.
Okay, but that's the thing. What is more likely the recipe for success for this team? Putting together 15 plays where you don't have a complete meltdown on the offensive line and get somebody killed, or hitting a big play? Because Jim Chaney said that, and Mason just tweeted in and said, I got a chance to hear Chaney talk a lot during the coach's clinic. He said the biggest keys to successful offense are explosive plays and situational offense.
That's kind of what I was talking about, where he needs to improve. Like, we can't have the
I need to know what his
negative seven plays.
Yeah.
We need more of the positive 25 plays.
Right.
Talking about yardage.
I wonder, the holding on to the ball, was that a confidence in the offense thing, or was that a I don't want to make a mistake thing?
I don't know. It's impossible to know that.
Well, Jim Chaney would know, and I guess I'm wondering is can you fix that? Can you help him develop the confidence to throw it before the guy's open to where he's going to be, not where he is? And can we design plays that get guys running, you know, wide open? Because we did that a couple times. Like that Juwan Jennings touchdown, wide open.
I have a quarterback theory that the decision-making at the quarterback position, because it's so has to be so lightning quick that you really can't teach it. Now, you can teach all the other decision-making processes. You can teach all the other fundamental and footwork and arm angles, and you can drill guys to where they can do all the other movements. But the decision on when and where to throw the football is something that happens in the brain, and it seems like, and maybe it can be coached some, but it definitely seems like the hardest thing to coach and the hardest thing to identify. You want to talk about guys busting out in the NFL? It's because the scouts fall in love with all those other things that you can see on tape. He's big. He's got a strong arm. Man, he can make all the throws. Even, you know, he's accurate. But the NFL level, the windows get smaller. You have to throw the ball when the guy might not look open. You have to kind of, in your mind, in an instant, just know that if I put the ball here, he might, you know, my Odell Beckham type receiver might can make that catch. And if he doesn't, it's incomplete, and throw it. And I wonder if Jarrett Garantano, if that's it. Now, you know, David Cutcliffe came in and took quarterback and helped with the, I think, what I would call the slower decision-making, like the, check it down. I'm about to get sacked. Check it down. I'm about to get sacked. Throw it away. And helped with that and helped manage that. Lane Kiffin came in with Jonathan Crompton, who seemed broken, and helped him
and Jim Chaney.
Helped him become a much better quarterback immediately with those kind of what I call the slow decisions. But the reason that the Brees, the Bradys, the Mannings are so good, like the guys that are just completely elite at the NFL level, is somehow they see it before it even happens, and they make the decision to throw it before it's even there. And I think it's the hardest thing in sports to know whether somebody has that or is going to get there. And I just wonder where on that spectrum Jarrett Garantano is, because I think all the other factors have completely made it impossible to know.
What does he do best? Yeah, it's kind of a problem, isn't it? The fact that we can't just immediately rattle off something. I was thinking about the South Carolina game when they went to the quick stuff. I thought that was probably his best performance.
I mean, I think he throws a pretty catchable ball. Like, I know sometimes he doesn't put the touch.
That doesn't count as what does he do best.
I think sometimes he doesn't put enough touch on it, but I've seen a lot of college guys that are a lot worse. There's a lot of college guys that come in highly touted, and they, for some reason, they throw footballs that receivers just drop a lot, or that are, I mean, even when Garantano puts it kind of behind the guy or underthrows it a little bit, it seems catchable. And maybe it's just these receivers are really good at those types of plays.
Well, if they're really good, a slightly underthrown ball is okay.
Right.
Although I would like to see him get rid of it a little bit earlier, and maybe the guys can catch it while they still run.
Yeah, I'm trying to think back to last year, and I'm not really remembering a situation where Garantano was able to just throw it right in stride and somebody catch it and just kind of like walk on into the end zone. They were more of like jump ball situations, or somebody kind of had to come back to it a little bit. There might have been one or two, but you got to – or they're just like 3 yards out in front and it's you're one step away, Palmer. Like,
so at South Carolina, he was 27 of 39. That's 69.2%. Only 207 yards, because a lot of that was, you know, throw, catch, yeah, tackle. Two touchdowns, no picks, and he only got sacked twice. Is that what we do? Does it need to be more of like the catch and throw it, catch and throw it, catch and throw it? And then we take a deep shot? Like, can we do a little bit of the set up? I mean, that's what they tried to do against South Carolina. Remember, they threw it deep multiple times. South Carolina's corners are just really, really good. South Carolina, they were geared up to stop the run, and they didn't have to have two safeties over the top. So even when we get single coverage, you had Palmer. I think Palmer dropped the deep one, and then South Carolina's corners just draped
like
over, yeah, you all night.
I mean, they tried to give you the middle of the field, just hit the right over the top.
I think that's
that
the
bend
game
don't break
plan.
Mentality.
That's what
Muschamp, that's what they do.
That's what Muschamp, yeah, does. Yeah. He plays. He'll play his corners way off so they can protect against the deep ball. Play a lot of cover three, and then he'll commit all of his safety and linebacker play, you know, except for the one deep safety, obviously, to stop the run game. And so I remember, like, Georgia just torched them throwing, like, deep out routes because Fromm was just on the money. And it's like, well, they were – you could tell they were trying to make him throw the toughest throw in college football, and
yeah,
he hit it enough to
he's
loosen
good
them up. And
he did that against us, too.
Then they went on to win, that's, obviously. But
he throws that probably better than just about anybody. And it's weird because every time he releases it, I think there's no way he's thrown it hard enough to get it there on time without getting picked off, and it just drops right in every single time. Yeah, he's not the quarterback you want to force to make that pass. I'm just looking at what Jarrett did last year, and if I'm Jim Chaney, how do I capitalize on what he does well with the tools that you have? And I'll be honest, that South Carolina – the Auburn game was obviously his best game. Dave, you mentioned 300-yard games. He was 21 of 32, 328, two touchdowns. A lot of those throws felt lucky.
They were.
Yep.
They were jump balls.
And I'm not saying that's not part of this offense, right? Like, I'm not saying, oh, well, we're not doing the Juwan Jennings is just bigger and meaner than everybody, so just throw it up to him. Because I think that will be. I think the game plan for South Carolina was probably the best game plan of the entire season by Tyson Helton. It was the one time where it looked like Tennessee came out and did something completely different to take advantage of a defense. You hit a couple of those deep shots, or if the defense can just stop Brantley after the second quarter, you win that game. Doesn't that make sense based on what we know? Like, don't rely on the offensive line to block for 4 or 5 seconds. Let him get it and get rid of it. Let him get it and get it to Josh Palmer real quick. Let him dump it to Wood Anderson. Let him get it on a little drag route to Juwan Jennings, to Callaway. Is that the way Tennessee decides to do it? And then set up a deep ball here and there?
I thought that was pretty obvious that last year you couldn't run the ball, so why not use the short passing game as the run game and then the deep shot to, you know, counterbalance that? And it's like they tried to do that, but they never
– it's like they tried too much to run it.
They couldn't stay on schedule at all, ever, in any game. Like, even the Auburn game where the offense was at its best, it never was really on schedule.
Yeah.
It would get behind schedule and then overcome and then do it again and repeat. And then the defense set you up. The defense, did they score that one touchdown?
Alante Taylor.
Alante Taylor recovered it right after it bounced around and got kind of
took that hop over the line.
Yeah.
I mean, that Auburn game, you rushed for 1.9 yards a carry. 36 rushes, 68 yards.
Yep.
I mean, you tried to run it too much all year.
Jim Chaney's licking his chops. I'm not going to have to run it at all.
I mean,
I don't know. What were they on third down at? Oh, 10 of 19. Thought it was better than that. A lot of bailouts, though. I don't know. A lot of people, after the Orange and White game especially, by the way, he was over 50% in the second half, and he was 50% in the first half. Like, he slow started, but he actually, he got much better after the first couple of series. I know a lot of people are, and I brought all this up because you said, you know, everyone, oh, Maurer. Hell, Shrout hits that first pass, and it's all Team Shrout.
And in a real game, though, he'd have gotten killed.
Yeah, true. I don't know what my expectations are for him under Jim Chaney. I just think Jim Chaney's smart enough to figure out whatever it is he does well and go. And I'm hopeful that Jeremy Pruitt doesn't get to tell Jim Chaney that, hey, we're going to run the ball on first and second down every time.
I've been told by the recruiting insiders that Jarrett Garantano from high school has always been the guy that looks great against air. Looks great even on 7-on-7. But when it's 11-on-11 and the full pass rush is in front of him with a full line in front of him, he's just never been an elite player, and that he was basically kind of overrated in that regard coming out of school. Because at the camps and at the stuff that, you know, they schedule for, you know, rivals and all this stuff, he looks like $1 million. But that's not real football. Like, I don't know. I think you're in a situation where he's the best you have at the moment, but Jim Chaney will quickly figure out if he's got it or if he doesn't. Because really, it's like an old high school coach told me one time, the most important part of my job is when a kid comes in as a freshman, figuring out where the best position that is to put that player. I feel like in college football, a huge part of the offensive coordinator's job is being able to identify who can really play quarterback and then mold the system around that guy. We mentioned like Tom Herman running Greg Ward, a former wide receiver at quarterback, and they're just going toe-to-toe with Oklahoma. You know, like, that's wild. Tennessee's had a habit of bringing in four-star guys that are highly touted, and they can't even see the field. You know, like, they can't even step in. Quentin Dormady can't even step into a throw. I mean, they really had no quarterback coach, and their offensive coordinators were hot garbage. So hopefully this is a corner turner. Jeremy Pruitt's already made kind of the one mistake hiring Tyson Helton, and for whatever reason, I don't care where he placed the blame, but it was a failure. So now can Jim Chaney be a step back forward in the right direction? If you want to weigh in, 865-546-8200, you really can't overstate how important the quarterback position is, and I think this year, again, it'll shape a lot of Tennessee's successes and failures. We'll come back with more. Stick with us right here on Fox Sports Knoxville. This segment of the program is brought to you by the Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. Check out all their services online at tvacreditunion.com. They even have an app that creates extremely easy banking solutions for you. It's the Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union, and they are celebrating 85 years helping their members grow financially, moving upward and forward with the Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. And they can do all the stuff that a bank can do. You know, right now you can check out the home loans feature on the website, and they also have that great rate on a new credit card. That is their April special as they go through this year, 2019, celebrating 85 years here in East Tennessee. They've got over 20 branches, so you can just walk in to the one closest to you, and you can find the branch the location closest to you at tvacreditunion.com. That's tvacreditunion.com, Knoxville, TVA Employees Credit Union. DC, let's get some of your reaction on the quarterback talk. DC says, I think he had some injury that really cut down on his mobility. Either that or New Jersey football is trash. I'm not buying a DC. He's not a runner. Like, sometimes it's okay. It's not your fault. But sometimes recruiting services are just wrong. They're just... Now, he might be athletically good enough to be a runner, but again, his mentality is not to do that. Like, what do you think? Do you think he has the frame? If I said, Houston, I'm going to give you this quarterback, and you have to craft a spread to run offense around him. Do you think he could do that if he had a different mentality, or do you think he just combine?
I think straight line speed's fine.
Yeah,
but he's not a runner. He doesn't side to side shifting,
like
breaking
never
tackles.
He's never made a guy miss, right?
That's what I'm saying. Like Josh Dobbs, the moment he took the field as a freshman, you saw that people were going to have a really tough time tackling him. And then it's weird for Dobbs because he would make a lot of his moves early, and then he would just straight line speed you mm-hmm. down the sideline or at least to the sideline to avoid a hit. Garantano doesn't have that first move or the second move, so his runs are kind of the opposite. Like, he straight lines when it's there, and then, you know, 8 to 10 yards down the field, probably best for him just to slide. He's just not going to make people miss. And he gets hit enough in the backfield. I don't want him taking hits in midfield either. But no, he's not a I don't know that dual threat is the right word here. He is a probably faster than average pocket quarterback, and when there's some type of ability to just tuck it and go, I'm okay with him running it. But we've seen on rollouts he gets hawked down by a D tackle.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
he's not naturally fast.
No. I think once he kind of gets up to top speed, he's a pretty fast guy, but he's not a quick guy. He doesn't get to top speed fast. He doesn't juke people fast. He's not a running quarterback. He did look a little bit more explosive in the spring game. He had a couple where I was actually a little surprised at how fast he got to top speed. But again, that's not something I think anybody on this coaching staff is going to want to try to take advantage of with Jared Garantano. I'd say protect him, get the ball out of his hand, help him make faster decisions, and let him hit a couple deep shots. That's probably your best bet. I think what would really help Jared Garantano this year is if they can find some way to run the ball at all. That was the problem last year. They had no way to run it. And so towards the end of the season, and especially towards the middle where you had, you know, kind of your toughest four stretches, it was, okay, we can't run it on these teams. Let's just flip it to Ty Chandler. I mean, how many catches did we say he had? 27, and it was all in four games. That's what Tennessee had to do last year to move the ball without, you know, Jarrett dropping back and having to chuck it all over the place. They need to figure out a way to run the ball. And I don't know if this will be on Will Friend or this will be on Jim Chaney. I'm not really sure, but if they can't, it's going to be trouble. Cuz he's not going to be the guy that does it.
No. And I don't know why. I mean, they ran some, at least one, like, zone read type of play with Garantano in the spring game. But
throw that away.
That's not going to be your bread and butter. Yeah. I mean, Davey asked about blocking scheme. After watching some more of the spring game, it looked like they're going to run a lot more zone blocking, which I think is smart. Like, typically, if your offensive line isn't supremely talented, the zone scheme gives you a better chance for success, because typically when you zone block, everybody takes one giant step in one direction and you try and just seal your guy, if you have a guy over you, a certain way. If you don't have a guy over you, you help your you help the guy next to you for just a second, make sure that guy gets blocked by somebody, and then you go to the next level. And typically the reason why the zone scheme helps you if you're kind of outmanned a little bit is if you get blown up, like if you try and steal your guy inside and he's just like, you know, the Alabama five-star that's just so quick that he gets around you to the outside, it's not like a running back is designed to hit that gap that is now plugged by a guy getting penetration in the backfield. The running back reads the entire area of the field. So if that guy jumps outside of you and you, because you couldn't seal him and he knows you wanted to, then you can adjust and just shove him the way he's already going, and that opens up the cutback hole. You know, if you watch back to, you know, Arian Foster with the Texans or Jamal Charles with the Chiefs or even Chris Johnson with the Titans, those guys were all great zone runners because they would just press the hole. They were all quick enough and fast enough. Well, really, Foster did it with vision. The other two guys were just lightning. And as soon as they saw a crease, boom, right in there. And sometimes the crease opened because a guy made his block correctly. Other times it's because, and sometimes, you know, the benefit for Tennessee this year could be that when you're playing Georgia or you're playing Alabama, that their athletic four- and five-star defensive lineman actually overplayed the play and, like, tried to get outside too early. You shoved him that way. So, you know, your running back, Ty Chandler, can cut back underneath it and gain big yardage. That actually happened a few in Tennessee, some of their a couple times. I mean, it was mainly against the bad competition, but it might have been at Georgia where, like, Brandon Kennedy a few times. When did he go out? When did Kennedy go out?
After the first game, so it wasn't him.
It wasn't him. It was, I guess, whoever was filling in at center. Like, they actually got – like, center was always a problem because he was bad in the first game, then he was out. But whoever was at center, like, actually kind of lost the block for a second. They actually got pushed back in the backfield, but then they just shoved the guy the way they had gotten beat. And it opened this massive hole for the cutback, and Tennessee running backs are actually able to gain, you know, 10 yards, 12 yards, instead of just the minus two that we saw happen so often. So my guess is that Chaney's going to put in a bunch of zone blocking schemes, and try and allow the defense to outrun itself sometimes. Because, A, think about it this way. You play a really bad team, it shouldn't matter how you what play you call or what you block, right? If you block a gap play, you should be able to open up the hole where it's supposed to be and get your guy through it. But when you play the better teams, if you zone block, then that gives you a chance for some big plays against those guys. Whereas if you try and like pull a guard and run ISO right at Alabama or right at Georgia, you're probably not having much success. Even with better, you know, tackles if your true freshmen are starting. Danny Boy says, my key for JG progression is that he makes quicker decisions and gets rid of it faster. I mean,
that's probably his biggest issue, right?
Yeah, he just holds it. Yeah. I swear, the weirdest thing about the spring game is that Garantano takes his drop, plants his back foot, and throws the ball slower than any quarterback on the roster. And maybe that's a thing. Like, I don't know. Maybe I should do an in-depth thing where I, like,
stop watch
him in live time over and over and over and note, like, 50 dropbacks from last year where he throws on time, air quote, like don't count the ones where he gets to the back foot and, like, holds it. Those are the ones we remember.
Yeah.
Those are the sacks he takes or the hits he takes or the strip sack, the fumble, the Florida, all that stuff. Maybe he's just slow the whole time. Maybe even when he rolls out, he's slow.
Great.
Because milliseconds in those moments are everything. Like, it.
But that's the thing. That's why I mentioned the South Carolina game. Like, that was not the case that night. Is it just anything down the field? Is it if he could...
he underthrows everybody, right? Is that because not because his arm isn't big enough, but because he throws it late every time?
Yeah.
You know what
I'm saying? That's what it is. It's lateness.
He's tardy.
It's weird, too. Like, I know he can throw it further in some situations, and he still underthrows it. So I don't know if it's I'm late and I'm nervous, or I'm late and I don't want to overthrow it. But I think you're absolutely right. I mean, you watch enough football, you kind of know back foot, and a good quarterback's got it out of his foot or out of his hand in a certain cadence, I guess. And with Jarrett, I'm with you. I think it takes him a split second longer to get to the drop. And then it's almost – he doesn't double clutch. It's just his steps forward seem slow on delivery. I think he's got a big arm. I mean, he doesn't need to step into one to just really hum it. Like, we've seen him absolutely throw lasers. It just feels like maybe there's
– no, there's something else going on.
It's a lack of trust. I don't know if it's a lack of confidence. I don't know if it's just a mental thing, if he's looking at too many defenders or not enough. I'm not sure.
Even when Keller Chris came into games last year, good, bad, and ugly, he still got rid of the football faster. Even if it was a really bad, dirted incompletion, even if it was a pick six, like, the ball still got away from his hand.
On time.
It so strange. So I don't get it. I hope Jim Chaney can fix that. But, you know, we said the same thing last time this last year at this time. Well, finally got a real quarterback guy in here. I hope he can help Jerry Garantano get rid of the ball faster.
Yeah. Didn't really work out.
No.
What's the leash like then? I mean, Jim Chaney's been pretty good with freshman quarterbacks everywhere he's been.
Oh man!
Here we go. I'm not calling for one of them. I'm just saying, at what point would Jim Chaney say, you know what? Might need to make a move here.
When you're down 10 in the second quarter to BYU.
Oh, come on!
That'd be the earliest. I'm just putting a range on it. I mean, you want the shortest possible leash.
The BYU game? Like, it's at least possible?
I mean, not really, but, like, surely you're not down 10 in the second quarter of BYU, right?
I don't know, man. That kid's good.
Mark this down for either old takes exposed or, man, Nate was on to something.
How many?
That's not a cakewalk. I don't know how many people out there, like.
How many quarterbacks on the schedule would you trade for?
Oh, goodness.
Obviously, the BYU kid. I don't
know. You know how sad it is that
kid's a
mouth?
Phenom. He's really good. Probably the Mississippi State kid.
There's two on South Carolina's roster.
Yeah.
That I would trade
take
for.
Take Brantley, Tua, from.
I think Franks is a good quarterback.
Linsky. Okay, turn your mic off. That was the one I was not going to give anybody.
No?
Kelly Bryant? Probably. Is that dude back for Kentucky? The JUCO? I would not take him.
No,
over
I wouldn't
Connor.
Take. What was his name?
I forget. He didn't really throw it.
No,
much.
I had the stats here. You want the? Here they are in QBR. Tua was one. Fromm two. Bentley three. Tamu four. Would you take Tamu over?
That's my boy.
Houston got every lead passer right for like the first half of the season. He just took Tamu.
Jordan
every
Tamu.
Week.
Jordan Tamu.
What about Kyle Shermer? He's gone, right? Is he gone?
Hey, I think so.
Drew Locke's gone. Felipe Frank's still there. Kellen Mond?
Yeah,
I'd take him.
He's not on our schedule, Nate.
Terry Wilson. I'm just going down the top.
Terry Wilson, that's who it was. That's I would not take Kentucky. Him.
Joe Burrow? Yeah, he's not on the schedule either.
Really good at the guys on the schedule.
Who's UAB's quarterback?
Hell of a job.
Who's UAB?
No idea.
If it's the guy they had last year, it might be in trouble.
So is it a quarterback problem? I mean, I'm not hating on JJ. I'm just saying, like, top-level quarterback play and where Tennessee is, like, how big of an issue is that in relation to, say, the offensive line or the play calling or the talent overall?
I mean, I think I just think if you lost to Auburn like everybody expected, how much different do we feel about the season last year? If you're 4-8,
it's bad.
And who would your wins be? You'd have the Kentucky win, I guess, right? So you have the Kentucky win,
UTEP,
and the three
ETSU
garbage ones. I mean, those three don't even count. You'd basically won one game. And I think a lot of people would be like, "Well, Kentucky didn't show up," because it really didn't feel like they did. I mean, they just kind of mailed it in there. Yeah, you got BYU.
Optimism Friday.
Florida is, I guess, debatable. Then what about Mississippi State? Who's their guy this year?
He's good.
We get down now to Rise 3 days later.
Alabama.
We're doing a Sunday show?
It's a 5-day for us.
Yeah.
We need two extra days so we can go to Optimism Tuesday.
Yeah.
UAB, Kentucky, Missouri.
DC Coltrane says, we all know the offensive line has been awful, but the number one problem is getting it out late. Former Vol QBs that aren't mouthpieces now have said it.
Wait, who is that? Who's he?
What?
Former Vol quarterback.
I mean, I don't know. That's what he said. But
I'm just saying he can follow up and let us know.
Sure seems like the ball getting out on time would help matters.
Big time. Welcome back. Final segment, hour number two. We talked about ESPN's preseason FPI when it came out. I think it was like 2 weeks ago. And Tennessee was a top 15 football team. Right there, locking it down. Number 15 in all the land. Some of your reaction before we get some updated playoff odds. Well, Buckethead just said, the sheep, they're coming for y'all.
Yeah.
He's a Garantano hater, right? We may need a word for that.
I think that's the fair way to say that.
Well, DC, called, he said, I'm a well-known hater.
He said he's a hater. I don't know if Buckethead's a hater.
Buckethead, you can let us know. Do you
don't worry about if people are haters or not.
DC says, we all know the offensive line has been awful, but the number one problem is getting
read that.
It out late. And then he up. I know. I was getting to what he followed up with. Because he said, former Vol QBs that aren't mouthpieces now have said it, and I asked, well, tell us who that is. DC, tweet it in. Tony Robinson and Jerry Colquitt.
Can we get to the playoff odds now?
I'm just trying to interact with
Can we get to the playoff
with
odds
the
now?
Listeners, Roberto says, I think we should all embrace that both our quarterback and offensive line leave a lot to be desired and that we're going to go 6-6 this year. Well, ESPN disagrees. They've got us as a top 15 team, according to all the measurements.
Adam McClintock has us going 10-2.
The analytics.
Can we get to the playoff odds now?
Yes.
Thank you.
Best chance to make the 2020 college football playoff per ESPN.
Tennessee.
Well, they're not the best chance. Oh. At the top, you have Clemson. 80,
you don't say.
83%. Alabama, 71%. Everyone else is less than 50%. Tennessee has a
2% chance to make the playoffs. I like to look at that as if you played this season, you know, 50 times, we're in the playoffs in one of them. Are you feeling lucky?
So there's a 98% chance we don't make it. 98? 98 was the year we won it. All right, destiny, here we come.
Yeah,
let's go.
That's GBO. It. Here we go.
It is funny to look at.
What about winning the whole thing?
It's got to be less than one.
Less than one. Less than one. But
greater than zero.
So you're saying there's a chance?
Theoretically, yes.
There's only, what is this, like 18, 7 teams that have a better than 1% chance to win the national title. It is kind of wild that we love college football so much, and there really isn't much parity, at least not for the national title. Like, I kind of complain and make fun of the NBA.
I think it changes every, you know, it goes in cycles.
Well, yeah, I guess it's different teams.
It kind of hasn't lately because Alabama and Clemson have just been so good. But I'd say the other teams are kind of rotating in and out of there on a year-to-year basis.
Guess who I guess this makes sense. There's a weird difference between most likely to win the national title and most likely to make the playoff. I guess it has to do with the strength of the SEC. Michigan actually has a better chance to make the playoffs than Georgia. But Georgia has a better chance to win the national title than Michigan.
That makes sense, yeah. And that's exactly what that is.
I'd agree with that.
That is, if Michigan gets there, they're probably going to have to face an SEC team, and that don't sound good. If Georgia gets there, even though they have to get through the SEC to do it, they're not going to have to likely play another SEC team once they get there.
Same thing happens with LSU and Oklahoma a little further down the list. Oklahoma, 35% chance to make the playoff, 5% chance to win the Natty. LSU, 32%, so less likely to make the playoff, but 6% chance to win the national title. It seems like for SEC teams, if they can just get into the playoff, they have a great shot to win, or you know, have a better shot to win.
Historically, that's been the case. But, I mean, this year, obviously, Clemson's going to be the favorite. I mean, they returned so much, including Trevor Lawrence.
Quarterback. Quarterback's everything, man. I mean,
it's a really big deal. Once Tua kind of got banged up.
That's true.
You know, things started to change. Real quick, though. If you're LSU... If you're Ed Orgeron or Will Wade, are you a little bit nervous at an AD change? By the way, did you know Jimbo Fisher's buyout, if he were to leave Texas A&M, is $0.00? So now that his athletic director's gone, if he just wants to walk away, he can at any moment and not owe the school a dime.
Do you know what it goes the other way? I mean, can they...
Like if they fire him?
If they fire him, what...
Jimbo Fisher? Oh, yeah. I don't think he's in danger of getting fired. I just think they haven't protected themselves, and now the AD's gone. Should he just want to up and leave?
Well, if the buyout the other way, though, is very small, I kind of like it. Because isn't that where schools... I don't think... You can correct me if you disagree, but I don't think schools get in trouble paying coaches a lot of money who are still actively coaching at the school.
No.
They get backed up when they end up paying 2 and 3 coaches buyout money who don't even coach there anymore. That's when Tennessee had budget problems. It wasn't that we're paying our current coach way too much money. It's that, no, we're paying 2 coaches, 3 coaches.
Unless you're Rick Barnes, then apparently fans get mad that you're paying him too much money.
But again, you can do that if you're not having to pay anybody else.
No, I agree. I'm with you.
Like, what's Rick Barnes' buyout if we want to fire him next year? Like, if he were to do something weird.
I think it's the same both ways. So I think, for us at least, I think it was $5 million.
Okay.
I think. It's probably changed now that we just updated his contract.
I mean, we're still paying Butch Jones, right?
Oh, yeah.
And like, that's the problem.
And he's not going to look for another real job, so he's just staying and making that $35K at Alabama.
So my point is, if Jimbo Fisher ultimately gets fired at Texas A&M down the road for some reason, maybe there's a weird reason where it's like not.
No, I don't know what his buyout is. He's not going to get fired. I just think it's weird that he could walk away right now. Like, if he doesn't like the new athletic director, he just could leave.
Yeah.
And owe nothing. And I'm sure there are plenty of schools out there, especially after seeing what he did in 1 year at Texas A&M, who would line up to hire him. I don't know if they'd give him the $7.5 million, but they would line up to hire him.
Yeah, I mean, if you're paying that much, you don't really have to protect yourself. Like, the money is just in his pocket. It's not even, like, out there.
JT Dirty Birdie says he thinks the whole contract is fully guaranteed, so if they fire him, they owe him $75.
Wow.
That's an investment. No wonder that AD left. He's like, I don't want to be on the hook for this. See ya.
Moving up in the world. Just make something look good and then go somewhere else.
But
like if you're Ed Orgeron and Will Wade, are you nervous that now you have a new athletic director who didn't hire you, especially Will Wade, given what's going on?
I am if I'm Will Wade. I'm not if I'm Ed Orgeron. I mean, Ed O, I feel like is SEC
Ed
Mike
Orgeron.
SEC Mike was arguing with I think Feinbaum's producer about this the other day. Feinbaum's producer, was it like John Hayes or something?
Yeah.
He was arguing that when you get a new AD, you got to get nervous as the coach. Kind of what you're saying. Like it's a different guy, so he might not be as fond of you as the guy that hired you. And SEC Mike was saying that there's also the dynamic, though, of a new AD coming in and not wanting to fire a guy until he has to.
John Curry.
Once you fire a guy, then you hire your guy. Now your clock starts.
Your clock starts, yeah.
So they were debating that. I thought that was – but I think both are true.
Woodward and Orgeron are both Louisiana guys. So you got at least – I know that might not go for a lot, but he will at least understand, like, what Edo means to the program.
Yeah.
He'll have a pulse of where the fan base –
what does he mean to the program?
I mean, well, you know how fans get it – we kind of talk about coach worshiping all the time. I mean, your fans are your main product.
Do you think LSU fans worship Ed Orgeron like more than they did Les Miles?
I think they just enjoy it more when he wins. I think if he
loses, yeah, most fans do.
Well, I guess what I mean is it's more. No, that's not true. I mean, if you win with a guy that's boring, it's not as much fun as if you win with a guy who's, you know, crazy like Ed O.
Well, you just. You just said they enjoy it more when they win, and I said, yeah. You mean they enjoy it more when Ed O wins than
if
Les Miles
won? Or yeah. There was a point where a family member of mine who's a Michigan fan would have died to have Les Miles, and friends I have that are LSU fans could not wait for him to be fired. So, I mean, I don't know. There's some dynamic of liking your coach.
Yeah, you're beholden to
depending
him.
On the wins and not depending on the wins and losses.
Now, I was going to bring up Harbaugh at Michigan. Like, I mean, he's one of theirs. So, I mean, they feel more of a even if he's not doing as well. Like, hey, let's give him a little bit more time.
I feel like the shine wore off of Jim Harbaugh pretty quick.
But Ed O's in the gray zone, right? Like the last couple years, his seasons have been in that range where it's like fans can talk themselves into being happy about it, or they can be mad that they didn't win more.
Yeah.
We'll come back. We'll kick off hour three, talk some more college football on the flip side. Stick with us right here on Fan Run Radio.